And that's some of the news for Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. The news is produced by Linda Perry and Rebecca Miles. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.
WBAI's local station board is holding its next meeting on Wednesday, May 12th at 7 p.m. It's a delegate assembly meeting to discuss the proposed referendums to change the Pacifica bylaws. Opinions may be expressed as part of the local station board meeting on Wednesday, May 12th at 7 p.m. The LSB meeting is open to the public and includes an opportunity for public comment. It is a remote access meeting. The fastest and easiest way to join is by using the link on the Pacifica Radio calendar and on the WBAI website at WBAI.org. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099 and enter the meeting ID 922-457-2995. That's 922-457-2995. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency 99.5. So it's 995-995-99. Thanks for listening, and we hope you join us at the LSB meeting, May 12th at 7 p.m. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. The previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up.
Listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI, co-hosted by Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. God and Green, an Unholy Alliance, is a recently released short documentary that addresses how potent social and economic forces propped up climate skepticism in the name of God, country, and capitalism. The documentary was directed and produced by Janine Butler and Catherine Butler, and Janine is with us today. Janine, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
We are also joined by Curtis Schaefer, co-director of the University of Virginia's Religion, Race, and Democracy Lab, which released the documentary. Curtis is also Francis Myers Ball Professor of Religious Studies. Curtis, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure having you all here. So God in Green is billed as, quote, the story of how potent forces came together to mount an army of climate change skeptics in the name of God, country, and capitalism. Now, what inspired you all to tell this particular story?
For me, it was a couple different things. One was reading Naomi Oreskes and Eric Conway's book, Merchants of Doubt, and viewing the Robert Kenner film from 2014 of the same name, and being really impressed with the story they told and the mix of journalism and scholarship, but also feeling like there was a story, a parallel story that also intersects at times about religion and the role that especially white evangelical religion has come to play over the last several decades in American politics.
Okay, so that book, what was that book about? And then specifically, what did you draw from that book that said, I have to make this particular movie?
Well, Merchants of Doubt, both the book and the movie are about how the tobacco industry created a kind of industry of science skepticism to counter the increasing evidence that smoking is bad for you. Climate change denialism used that playbook beginning in the seeds of it were really in the early 80s, but it really started coming to a head in the late 90s and into the zeros.
Right.
That's when our story really picks up with contemporary white evangelical political action in the mid-2000s. But they were using a playbook that had been around for decades, developed by the tobacco industry.
Janine, you are a filmmaker. What was it about this particular project that you just had to get on?
Well, the inspiration behind it is really did come from the Religion, Race, and Democracy Lab. They came to us and after having seen another film that we had done, an independent film called American Heretics, and it was along the similar lines of the role of religion, race, and politics in America. And so after talking with them a lot, they came to us and said, we've got this idea, and of course we wanted to do it and see if we could find a way to do it in a short form format in the middle of the very beginning of the COVID pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And so the challenges were quite high in terms of we couldn't get on location and profile any one character and make that the gist of the short. And also the nature of these topics is so huge that we were excited by the challenge, and we ended up sort of coming to the idea together of maybe introducing many voices in this space would be an entree to bigger, richer conversations down the road for anybody seeing it. So bringing in some different perspectives, whether it's a young evangelical or if it's a farmer or if it's a minister fighting for environmental justice, you know, those were the kinds of voices that we wanted to hear their perspective of what the cross section is between these three different big topics.
And, you know, at the very beginning of the film, you all posed two questions. You say, when did climate change go from a scientific metric to a political hot potato? And what does God have to do with it? So let's start with the first question. When did climate change go from a scientific metric to a political hot potato?
I think we focused on a particular point in the film that talks about that. And when you see the scientific metric in the film, it's like, you know, it's the climate change conversation that was started by Al Gore, not started by Al Gore, but became politicized.
Popularized by Al Gore.
Yeah. And at that point in the political rhetoric, there were a lot of things happening among the conservative religious right too on the political arena. And it kind of got rolled up into one conversation, but really that happened before. And I think that those are the areas of expertise where the historians and Curtis can talk about where it's really been, we specifically reference that point, but I think that it's really been boiling up for a long time in the political arena.
Yeah, in the film, we hear from Bob Inglis, and you know, he said that even in the late 90s, as a Republican from a conservative district of South Carolina, it was a given that he would espouse skepticism about global warming. But the negative results for his own political career, right, took a long time to come to fruition, right? And it really wasn't until the late 2000s that we saw a kind of fallout, right, for walking out of step with both evangelical and Republican claims about climate change.
So evangelicals can tend to walk in step on climate change. What about, what's the answer to the second framing question of your movie? What does God have to do with the politicization of climate change?
Right. So that's something that we wanted to try and tease out more fully in this film and try to bring this into conversation with people who are working in environmental justice or in climate change more broadly, climate change activism more broadly. And if you take a really big picture, you can look at data like an indicator that 60 to 65% of people who have some religious affiliation globally and who say religion is an important part of their daily life say that when there's disagreement between science and religion, they're going to side with religion over science. So that's a powerful starting point for thinking about why religion matters for important social and environmental issues. And in a country where, you know, we're over 50% non-affiliated now, I think sometimes that's a little bit hard to see, especially if you live in certain parts of the country, right? And then if we start to look at the U.S. a little bit more closely, where we started to focus was on white evangelicals because their voice has been so potent in American politics over the last several decades. If you think conservatively that 15% of the U.S. population are white evangelicals, that's, you know, somewhere between 45 and 50 million people. That's a conservative estimate. Some estimates say that evangelicals as a diverse group is up to 100 million Americans. So we're talking about a huge block of Americans.
A lot of people.
Honestly, from the coasts, sometimes that's a little hard to see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then finally, if you look at, say, exit polls, for instance, from the 2016 election, you can see that 80% of those white evangelicals favored Trump. So if you look at the voting trends and the religious and political commitments of white evangelicals, and you look at their size, you almost can't help but deal with them as a group, right?
You're listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio, and we are talking with Janine Butler, director and producer of God and Green and Unholy Alliance, which is a short documentary recently released by the University of Virginia's Religion, Race, and Democracy Lab. The documentary addresses how potent social and economic forces propped up climate skepticism in the name of God, country, and capitalism. And we are also joined by Curtis Schaefer, who co-directs the Religion, Race, and Democracy Lab.
So there are plenty of reasons in the Christian tradition for protecting the environment. Some of them are described in your film by a fellow named Joel Salatin.
Just imagine if the moral majority had said, you know what? We think God created the earth and it's his, and we're going to dedicate ourselves afresh and anew to taking care of it, which means we're going to start pushing for compost instead of chemicals. And the fact is that factory farming, it pollutes the ground, it disrespects the chicken, it stinks up the neighborhood. Everything about it is terrible, is against being a good neighbor. So we're going to start buying from local farmers. We want to be connected to our food. We want to, you know, you can see the narrative.
Now, American evangelical Christianity, at least in theory, could have emphasized that message. Why didn't that happen?
Well, it was for a very brief moment in about 2006 when the National Association of Evangelicals, which is the main evangelical lobbying group, came out with the doctrine which they called creation care, which said that humans have a right as people of God, have a mandate rather as people of God to care for the creation. This did not sit well with, on the one hand, conservative Christians who were already allied with Republicans, and free market Republicans who were fully allied with major industries, including the oil industry. You can't have a major voting bloc that typically votes Republican come out for governmental control that's going to directly affect the oil industry. So they went into overdrive from 2007 to 2011 or so with a climate skepticism in the way that Oreskes and Conway talk about in Merchants of Doubt. And it worked wonderfully. So by the mid-teens, you find politicians on the Republican side basically needing to disavow the reality of climate change.
So from Dr. Anthea Butler's point of view, it stems from Bob Jones University, and it has to do with race and taxation. And that was the rise of the Christian right. And they were rolling together all these different issues. And, you know, the issue of climate became one of the issues that got balled up into the arguments, the platform, sort of these top down issues. And then others will also tell you that when the environmental movement started, that many Christians were on board with it, but it changed. And when it changed was with Jerry Falwell Sr. really guiding the political and agenda of the Christian right. And it got wrapped up into all the other platform issues. And part of the argument was that, you know, only God controls the climate, and it's man's hubris to think that climate change was created by man or impacted by man.
So in some ways, one could say that you've been talking about white evangelicals. One could say that climate denialism is also a marker of a certain kind of white identity, that to be a white evangelical is to deny what's happening with the climate based on biblical doctrine. So the Bob Jones thing is really important because it sounds to me like it's a reaction to sort of the ways in which the civil rights movement was changing the country. And so that became a problem in that, you know, to be someone who is against the environmental movement is also really wrapping oneself in a certain kind of whiteness. Would you say that's true?
I personally don't know the answer to that. I think Curtis would be better to talk about that, or one of the experts. We focused on this one cross section. I'm not sure if it's as straightforward as that. You know, I just don't know. I don't know if there's plenty of Black evangelicals that are climate deniers too. I just don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Mm-hmm.
Now, can you explain the connection between the oil industry money and evangelical thought leaders? How direct is it? You know, is ExxonMobil and Chevron, are they bribing pastors of mega churches to say certain things, or is it less direct than that?
Yeah, I think it's less direct, right? So part of the story we told relies on the work of Darren Dochuk, who wrote this wonderful history of oil, religion, and political thought in the 20th century. And he does show that the oil families of the 20th century were directly involved in certain promoting opposite visions of Protestant Christianity, one very conservative, one quite liberal. One became indirectly, right, what we see in the likes of Liberty University, very conservative educational units, institutions. One became the Rockefeller Foundation. Mm-hmm. It's less direct, and this is more of an issue of aligning priorities around certain kinds of language, such as America First, such as free market, such as the limitations of government to tell you as an individual, specifically as a Christian individual, what you can and cannot do. So it's more a marriage rather than a coercion.
Well, while watching this film, I found myself thinking about something that Charles Lewis said. Charles Lewis is the founder of the nonpartisan watchdog group Center for Public Integrity. And when asked about the climate denying oligarchs, Charles and David Koch, David passed in 2019, Charles said this. He said, the Kochs are on a whole different level. There's no one else who has spent this much money. They have a pattern of lawbreaking, political manipulation, and obfuscation. I've been in Washington since Watergate, and I've never seen anything like it. They are the standard oil of our times, end quote. Now you talked about Standard Oil in this film, but not Koch Industries. Where do the Koch brothers fit into the story, and why are they left out of the film? And I'm thinking, for example, of the influence they've had on a Tea Party, which has been critical in terms of shifting things towards climate denialism.
Yeah, we had room for 8 voices, not 9 voices in this film.
Okay.
So that's one answer. I mean, it really was an issue of concision. But I think the other issue that's more to the point is that we ended up telling a story largely about evangelical religion in the U.S. not about religion in general. Koch brothers have given to Catholic interests, including Catholic University, but they weren't particularly renowned for their promotion of certain religious views. It was political views and libertarian views in particular, which are sometimes very closely aligned with certain kinds of religion, but they didn't put religion first. Right? They put libertarianism first. So at the end of the day, it was a related story that was not directly intertwined with our story.
If we imagine a typical observant evangelical Christian today, now I understand there's a lot of diversity around potentially 100 million people, but if we can sort of construct an ideal type evangelical Christian, probably goes to church at least once a week, probably votes Republican the vast majority of the time, probably does not listen to Pacifica Radio Network and watches news sources that might be different from the ones that I watch. When someone says climate justice or environmentalism, or even just climate change, what does that person hear? What are their associations with those terms?
I think it's scary for them. I think it's like, you know, hearing climate change or global warming is probably like hearing right now critical race theory, or maybe in the heyday of the Glenn Beck era, social justice, right? These are words that have such emotional power right now in conservative media, particularly in, you know, if we're talking about big media, Fox, but also in the emerging new media of the conservative movements of all stripes. But I do want to emphasize, and we really tried to in the film, that it's a diverse group, right? I mean, and change is possible, and complexity of viewpoint is possible. I think Joel Salatin, if anybody knows anything about him, knows that he's a complex figure culturally, socially, and politically. Richard Cizik, who was one of the most prominent evangelicals from the 80s into the 2000s, basically had a conversion, right? Radically changed his views. So change is possible. But on balance, I think they've been, words like climate justice or climate change or environmentalism have become emotionally driven, scary words.
So I'm really interested in those conversion processes. But first, let me follow up on the content of the emotion, because for a lot of consumers of mainstream news and left-oriented news, they're very emotional terms too. They induce existential dread. They induce fear about the future. Oh my goodness, cities are going to flood. The coastlines are going to disappear. The planet will change. And I feel emotional. You know, if you learn that science, you feel emotional reaction.
Yeah.
But it's an emotional reaction in the direction of believing the science, not in the direction of disbelieving the science. So could you say a little bit more about what the emotional associations would be for our ideal typical evangelical Christian who sees things perhaps a different way?
Right. Well, as Janine said earlier, a platform of evangelical Christianity is that God created the earth and God has ultimate control over our entire existence. So there's a sense that the very idea that we have changed the planet through human action is either preposterous or presents a kind of hubris on the part of certain people. And related to that, if you start to suggest that the government should get directly involved based on the premise, right? But for them is the mistaken premise that humans have altered the character of the planet and the planet's atmosphere. You're inviting the government into your life in all sorts of ways that you do not want, right? And that is scary for them.
Fear of big government, fear of more regulation, maybe fear of taxation. They're going to come for my money. They're going to come for my property. Right. They're going to try to tell me what to do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you look at the no hamburgers for 4th of July event that just happened, right? I think that's a kind of indication, right, of the way in which the personal and the political are developed into a sense that my personal well-being, my personal freedom, my ability to make a choice, right, as an American citizen are gravely under threat.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. And we are talking with Curtis Schaefer, who is a professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia, and Janine Butler, who is the producer and director, co-producer and co-director of the short documentary God in Green, an Unholy Alliance. So any ideas on what sorts of messages and arguments could potentially reach these folks and help them to understand that the science is real? You even mentioned conversion before, perhaps as a metaphor. But how can we help to show them that it's not a vast conspiracy, that it's in fact a dire problem that will transform their children's lives and should be taken seriously? What do you think?
Well, I'll take a stab at the first part of this. I mean, part of this is short pieces like this one coming out of institutions like UVA that have the ability to reach, you know, they're making it available to their students. The transcripts are available, the ability to reach many young people across the board. And it has been our experience when some people younger who have watched this piece, the main answer is usually, well, we didn't know this. Nobody ever told me this. And that goes across the board, whether you're right, left, or in the middle. So I think sometimes just hearing a little context, a little historical context to why things are the way they are is the first step in creating, in changing minds and changing perspectives. And it doesn't mean that they might have a religious conversion, but they certainly might have a conversion to a different way of thinking about things. And I do think too, just in terms of our research and some of what we were finding is in the evangelical world, a lot of the younger generation is pushing back against some of the, you know, the thinking and the dogma that came out of this particular period that we're talking about. That's by no means a scientific, you know, comment, but it's just based on our small group of people that we talk to. There seemed to be a bit of a, you know, we're rethinking some of this.
So do you see this film reaching science skeptics or folks who want to sort of disengage from the particular ideology that's being placed around the climate change? In other words, I wonder if your film is going to reach the evangelical. It seems to me that it's actually speaking to exactly those young people that you're talking to. It's like those folks over there, that's what they believe. And this is a problem. And this is what's driving some of the climate denialism.
I think we hope it does. And I think it can, I think taking it, having people on there representing young evangelicals for climate action, I think is really helpful and hopeful because they themselves have an enormous network in place to reach their own audience. Uh-huh. You know, they are actively trying to seek out their own groups and lobby and create new ways of thinking about this particular topic. And there is invested in it and serious about it as any we've seen, right, Curtis?
Yeah, absolutely. And although the film is, it's critical of certain political moves that some evangelicals have made over the past two decades, it's not critical of evangelicalism in the sense that we do have multiple evangelical voices within the film. For me, I almost hope that the larger audience is seculars or non-affiliated people who may not know evangelicals, may not know that they know evangelicals in their lives, and perhaps they can find out, you know, through the work of Kyle Shapp and his young evangelical group, or by learning the really interesting life story of Richard Cizik, that they have shared interests that they didn't know about.
Janine and Curtis, thank you so much for coming on our show and talking about your very important film. Please tell listeners where they can find your documentary.
Yeah, the film is publicly available on the website of the University of Virginia's Religion, Race, and Democracy Lab. That's religion.virginia.edu. And you can also find full interview transcripts from all eight interviewees there, as well as a reading list and a complete transcript of the film itself.
Also, web searching for God$Green brings it right up.
And it's also a free streaming view. It just streams from the website, similar to a YouTube video, and people don't have to pay for it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much. You have been listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. And we have had a wonderful time talking to Janine Butler and Curtis Schaefer. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
The WBAI's local station board is holding its next meeting on Wednesday, May 12th at 7 p.m. It's a delegate assembly meeting to discuss the proposed referendums to change the Pacifica bylaws. The opinions may be expressed as part of the local station board meeting on Wednesday, May 12th at 7 p.m. The LSB meeting is open to the public and includes an opportunity for public comment. It is a remote access meeting. The fastest and easiest way to join is by using the link
on the Pacifica Radio calendar and on the WBAI website at WBAI.org. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And enter the meeting ID 922-457.